Around Comics, Episode 27. Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
I am the world's forgotten boy.
Welcome back, Sal. It's good to have you on the show again.
It's good to be back.
All right. We are joined, as always, by our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
It is no fun working in a 110-story Target. Current events.
Tom works in the Sears Tower.
So.
And our guest today is the writer of the upcoming series from Image Comics called Phonogram. He is Kieran Gillen.
Hello. Good evening.
Kieran, thank you for being on the show and welcome to Around Comics.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We actually have a little announcement here. We have procured a sponsor for Around Comics that we are very excited to announce, and Sal is going to tell you a little bit about them.
Well, this episode is sponsored by YouBuyNow.com, your spot on the web for toys, action figures, and collectibles. Check out their excellent selection of DC Direct, Marvel Legends, Master Replicas, Star Wars figures, and more. That's YOUBuyNow.com. And now the good folks at YouBuyNow.com are offering a 10% discount to all Around Comics listeners. Just use the coupon code AROUNDCOMICS, all one word, when placing your order and receive an additional 10% off. YouBuyNow.com, check them out today.
Do it!
And Chris, I believe you, didn't you recently buy something from them?
I bought one through one of their other companies, but YouBuyNow is affiliated with a couple other sites that we'll actually talk about a little bit later. But yes, Brian and the guys at YouBuyNow have been fantastic. And one thing I wanted to say is that we've had a lot of people emailing and contacting the show asking for ways to support Around Comics, and
which we appreciate greatly.
We do appreciate, but we don't want you to send us money because we don't want our listeners to ever feel like they have to buy what we're putting out because we enjoy this.
You can send me money. You can specifically.
Send Tom. But the best way to support Around Comics is to support our sponsors. I think everybody wins that way. Our sponsors get a new customer. You get something that is really cool. And the advertising dollars that we get from those sponsors is going to go right back into the show to make this the best comic book podcast that we can make it. So check out YouBuyNow.com and treat yourself to something nice. And,
Now let's plug a book.
Actually, I have a couple more announcements. Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please come by and introduce yourself. We would love to meet you. Dark Tower is now offering 20% discount on all purchases made during the show. Just mention us and get 20% off. It's great. We actually had a couple guys come in before the show today. Benji and...
Bernie.
Sorry, Bernie. Don't forget about our June contest. This month, write a comics or Around Comics-themed haiku. Email it to info@aroundcomics.com. We're going to read a few of those at the end of the show. And if you have a chance, drop by iTunes Music Store and write us a review. And those are the announcements.
On with the entertainment portion.
Kieran, now you get to talk.
Yeah. What do you think about buyitnow.com?
YouBuyNow.com. He's already butchering the sponsor's name.
I'm a big fan.
Kieran,
good to hear.
You are working, or actually have finished the first issue of a really unique book that is coming out from Image called Phonogram. And before we, on this side of the phone line, butcher what this is about, why don't you take a couple minutes and tell our listeners what Phonogram is about and a little bit of the concept behind it.
Well, I mean, if we were in a kind of Hollywood pitch meeting and I had to do the Dirty High concept, it would be kind of like High Fidelity meets Hellblazer. It's kind of... essentially, it's the idea of pop music and magic, or specifically that pop music is magic. I mean, mean, you know how music works. It just kind of affects people and changes people.
Well, I know...
To a record, and you feel happier or sadder or whatever. And, but, you know, that's basically a magical act. So we're taking that metaphor and turning it into the actual thing that drives the plot. So, essentially, it's about these people called photomancers who kind of just move through life and use records and music and everything around music in a way to alter their and each of his lives. And specifically, it's kind of a... It's a kind of a big idea, so we'd like to actually do other series, but the first mini-series is specifically about one guy called David Cole, who's not a particularly nice guy, and he ends up sort of essentially having to deal with history and the idea of essentially what memories actually mean in pop music. And that's kind of what the first story's about.
Now, I know that you sent us some material on this, a preview of it, and a lot of the material you had in the back of the book was very helpful in understanding, you know, where you guys came up with this idea, but your background is in journalism, music journalism, as well as other types of journalism, but you obviously have a deep love for pop music, and I think that's sort of where this all stemmed from, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because people ask me where I got the idea from, and it's like, most of the ideas I've had in comics, I can sort of go, okay, I was in the toilet, and it descended from heaven, but Phonogram I really can't, it just sort of like crept up on me, and I thought, if I look at stuff I've written all the way back from when I was like a fanzine writer, when I was like 18 or so, I can sort of see traces of what I was sort of heading towards. So yeah, I'm not exactly sure where the idea came from in that way, but it's very much like, it is very me, and it's me trying to actually argue that all these sort of, this weird voyeuristic life people get through pop records is actually worthwhile and interesting, and fun, you know, because it is fun.
I really thought originally when I heard what the idea was, that I thought it was sort of too high concept, but then when I read it, I recognized immediately people I know in my own life who use mixtapes to generate feelings in other people that aren't necessarily, you know, the most altruistic attempts. And I really found myself really, really enjoying it quite a bit, and I loved it. I loved it. It was a great book.
But I agree, that's what kind of interests me, in that the idea of music and magic is a bit, you know, highfalutin and, like, airy-fairy sort of stuff.
But people do it all the time.
What interests me about music is that kind of how it gets people in terms of, like, in everyday life. And that's where we're actually all about, I think.
Well, that's, you know, I talked to you a little bit about that, and where I'm not, I was never the type of person that had a deep emotional connection with music. I always liked music, I always listened to music, but I never had that real deep connection with music, and I always sort of envied it. So I wasn't sure how I was going to experience the book, but it gave me sort of a look at that personality and at that world and at the people that do have that connection, and I really enjoyed it and was able to understand it a bit more from it. So I think it worked, and you even talked about this to some degree, that you really wanted to write the book on many levels so that as many people could enjoy it as possible, and I really think that it worked that way.
I'm pleased, because it's kind of like, you do worry when you write this, especially like Kinnicky, how many people in America know who Kinnicky are? And you just kind of hope the idea that people get the idea of somebody being into a band and just kind of get it in a sort of sociological way. I mean, the sort of standard metaphor I use, like, if you read Lord of the Rings, you don't need to know all the history. You don't need to know what elf did, what mean things for another elf 800 years before the book started. But, you know, some people enjoy reading that much into it. But you can actually get the actual narrative just because it's a coherent narrative. Mostly coherent, anyway. That's, you know, that's the plan.
Well, I think one of the things that you accomplished in the book, in the glossary of, you know, this is the band that's mentioned here, and this is who is mentioned here. And I know that for Tom and I, you know, I you know, came out of high school and became a huge Afghan Whigs fan. And, you know, I know who the Buzzcocks are.
I mistakenly bought a Cooler Shaker record and regretted it almost immediately. Yeah.
But, you know, as I'm reading this book, I kind of experimented around. I read the first issue three times this week, and the first time I read it was in, like, you know, total silence, and read it and loved it. And then the next time I played Afghan Whigs, Gentlemen, and listened, you know, to that while I'm reading the book, which was a completely different experience. And then the last time I read it, I listened to the first Stooges CD, and whatever soundtrack you put to this book changes the way that you read it in ways, which is really cool.
I mean, that, you know, excites me, because that's kind of what I'm... Is that kind of, if Phonomancy was real, that's the sort of thing that these people would be doing in the comic. So it's kind of like, you're kind of treating the comic the way the characters in the comic would treat it, if that makes any sense. Yeah. And I like that, because, you know, when I wrote it, I was doing that. You know, I wrote a lot of the, especially the Cole, a lot of Cole's monologues in the first issue, I was obsessing over Gentleman, because it's, you know, this pungent, powerful album. And deeply self-confident, but also deeply wrong. But, you know, yeah, so it's quite, I quite like the idea, you know, there was this, what was the album called? Taking Drugs to Make Music to Take Drugs to.
Spiritualized?
Basement Free.
Yeah,
Spiritualized. Like bootlegs.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like that. It's like listening to music to write comics to listen to music to. I don't know. I like the idea anyway.
Well, you know, you're talking about David Cole, and he's, to me, one of the most interesting characters I've seen in comics in quite a while. At what point did you... did you consciously make the decision to make him the bastard that he is?
He is not a nice guy.
No, but that's what I like about him, is that he's not a nice guy, and he has some issues, but yeah. I mean, he's an interesting character because of it. Yeah. I'm just wondering, was that something you set out to do initially, or did the character sort of develop in that way as the story progressed?
It's kind of like a lot of the... I mean, there's not many nice people in Phonogram. It's kind of, and that's kind of my look at. It's kind of one of the sort of the subtle comments. The people who are actually completely buy into pop music and do this. Something's not right with them, you know. That some people can be lovely and there's elements, but there's always something that's driven them to do this. And Cole's like that. As in, I mean, especially because later on we'll meet Cole and we'll see Cole before he was essentially a Phonomancer, if only for a second, and how he was when he was just starting to be a Phonomancer, how he's changed and how. You know, essentially, he curdled as a personality, and it's kind of, the first issue is very much Cole at his worst, and it kind of, you know, the one worry, of course, we showed the first 10 pages, and we kind of, in fact, some people didn't get it, but some people, like, would just take him as, oh, you're meant to like him, as in, you're meant to think he's a positive person to be, and he's compulsive, but I wouldn't say he's particularly, a decent example of a human being.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's parallels between that sort of behavior and people that collect comic books too. There's sort of like crossover between like certain people. When I was in high school and I got into, you know, the reason I started buying stuff like Suede or Manic Street Preachers when I lived in like Green Bay, Wisconsin, was because I wanted to be different. Not really because I always necessarily, you know, really identified with it. And people take sort of ownership of that stuff and sort of say, this is what I am. You know, just like how people identify with certain comic books. And that's how they want to express themselves, which I thought was really, like, a really interesting parallel that I'd never seen anyone really draw before. People that want to use these other art forms to say who they are.
Yeah, it's that sort of, it's that obsessive mindset. I mean, character, I think it's, I mean, pop music or comics, in fact, quite a lot of the things can kind of, especially for a developing personality, it's kind of a crutch, as in you realise a band acts like this, therefore I can act like this, and it's like you step into the chrysalis and you come out as somebody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the character in the first issue, Emily Astor, the girl in the scene, which isn't in the preview. I mean, she's very much that, as in kind of at the point of her character, she used to be someone else completely different. And then one day she decided, no, I don't want to be that person anymore. And she essentially transformed herself into the creature she is now, who's, another quite bad person. bad but having fun. Well, previously she was a bad person who wasn't having fun.
Well, as far as music changing you, I think that, you know, if you're talking about the magical properties of music, and Sal and I have been talking about this off and on throughout the week, and, you know, I tell people, a lot of time, you know, I will talk about, you know, your musical taste, and it's like, you know, I'm, you know, 12 years old watching Friday Night Videos at like 11 o'clock at night one summer, and U2's New Year's Day came on. And I remember it was right after a Chicago Stay the Night video. And that was the watershed moment that changed. I watched that video and I said, that's the kind of music that I want to listen to. And that was a definite before and after moment for me. And was it a magical occurrence? Well, not in a mystical way, but, you know, for me and
I mean, what is magic, though? Well, I mean, I think that's sort of the point, not to, but what, you know, sort of defining what is magical. I mean, something you can't explain. It's like love or hate, or I mean, you can't explain how those emotions. Well,
it's
occur.
That it's that it means something, and music means something to people, and it's amazing how it's been able to be brought over into a comic like this.
Yeah, well, I absolutely. Maybe we should talk about sort of the metaphysics of a phonogram. And no, I mean, like because
no,
I had to get deeper, everyone, a little bit deeper. Well, I had the question of you know, what makes someone a photomancer, or what are they using? You know, I was a little confused at the part of the book where they were remembering or Cole was remembering
flashback.
The Kaneki scene.
Yeah, the Kaneki scene.
Yeah.
And I was sort of confused by what he was doing. Well, I mean, I know what he was doing or what, you know, but...
He's trying to get laid.
Yeah.
We've all used music for that.
For that. Well,
but, what he was doing to her, you mean?
Exactly. That's sort of where I was
I tell you what, we've got the author here. Why don't we ask him?
Well, I'm trying to get to the question, but I was having a hard time. Sorry.
What was Cole trying to do there?
Well, actually, the metaphor I was talking about is that whole scene is about... the girl thinks Cole's someone else, essentially. As in, she thinks he's this incredibly nice guy who likes Kaneki, and the fact that they share this love of music makes him someone else, when really he's not. Cole's actually understanding of Kaneki is completely different. He's not the person she thinks he is. So, and the metaphor essentially I'm using is Cole is a one-night stand. It's a one-night stand. He's not going to give her a phone number. He's not going to have anything to do with her after that point. She's essentially going to, from Cole's perspective and her perspective, they might as well not exist anymore. And I've known people who've done that, and I've maybe done myself once or twice. But fundamentally,
and now they know where to find you.
So it was fundamentally, he's trying to essentially actually wipe her memories of that event. So it might as well not existed, if I'm saying.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
That's sort of what I was.
That's an example of the way music has influenced somebody in their life, and I've kind of followed that through the metaphor, and that's what happened. Of course, you can just take a surface level reading. I think so. Cole's done a spell with some kind of the Kaneki record, but metaphorically, Cole did a spell by pretending to like Kaneki in a way that she didn't, and essentially abused the trust because she didn't know better. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think I was looking... I mean, obviously, on the surface, I understood it, and even metaphorically, I understood it. It was sort of the simplest form of magically what was he doing, you know what I mean, or how...
I did the same thing with R.E.M.'s Life's Rich Pageant back in, like, 94. It was great.
It never worked for me.
Actually, I remember some guy doing it with the Benz, specifically this DJ I used to know. And he was like, gushing, I really like the Benz. It's like, you don't like the Benz. You're just trying to sleep with this girl.
It's just a tool. It's just a tool to get what you want.
Hi, I'm Matt Fraction, and this is Around Comics, and it's a podcast that you listen to on your pod, and it's casted to your pod, and you can listen to it, and it's sweet. And I love it, and I love you.
All right, so one thing, and we're going to deviate here, because Sal and I were both going to take you to task on this.
All right. Not Kula Shaker fans, are you?
No, not Kula Shaker fans.
Well, no, but it might be a misunderstanding because I think I may have misread it or misunderstood what he said. But in the back of the in the glossary, you were talking about the Buzzcocks, and how they were basically the beginning of punk.
You're talking to some big Ramones fans here, pal.
Yeah, I had.
Okay. I love that. I'm sorry. They were the beginning of punk as a kind of, what's the word? Punk was an absolute fundamental thing. Well, after the fact, what I think in terms of actual commercial influence, in terms of songwriting and approach, and in terms of records which you hear, people take more from the Buzzcocks than any other band. I think. I mean, in terms of actually your basic rubbish pop punk band, mostly takes from the Buzzcocks more than even because the Ramones are so stripped down. You can tell if you're hearing a Ramones rip-off band. Also, Buzzcocks, since they're a little bit more sophisticated.
Sure.
Kind of got they kind of, like, permeate more. I mean, it's very easy to look at, say, a lot of, like, the 90s sort of crossover pseudo-punk stuff.
Blink-182.
I mean,
Yeah.
When they really started out sounding like the Buzzcocks for me. And they sound more like the Clash now. But fundamentally, especially even on the indie side, I mean, the people aren't even being punk. They're sort of... that sort of punk indie stuff. Like even Knicky. Knicky were, you know, big obvious Buzzcocks influence. Yeah, that's just kind of my announcement anyway.
Okay, well, we'll
really
let you...
And I really like the Buzzcocks.
Oh, as well, so do I. I mean, no question.
I was listening to Buzzcocks and it's just and one of those Afghan Whigs on the way here.
It's just one of those, like, you know, 15-year-old punker, you know, mentality of, like, you know, screw you, you don't know what you're talking about. You
Black
know,
Flag has been punk started.
I think, you know, but as I've said before, I'm, like, musically inept, so, you know, I'm sure you would probably know way better than I would.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I've been known to be fundamentally wrong on many occasions. That's kind of like, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I wrote my letters page in the back of the comic, is that, you know, we actually want people to write and say, no, you're full of shit here, it's actually like this. we quite like debate and talking, because that's kind of part of it too.
Someone will try and use that Knicky trick.
It's, kind of it's one of the reasons why I'm not going to say I keep the magic systems vague, but I keep the magic systems open. Uh-huh. Look, the idea is, a lot of phonomancers have their own magic systems, the idea this is how this works. And
well,
in the same way, there's lots of different conflicting magical belief systems anyway.
Sure.
All these different sort of philosophies about what pop music means, or what music means generally, kind of each have their own phonomantic avatar, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
There was actually something I was going to ask you about, and I think this was posted on one message board or another this week about the lettering on the cover about some, you know, you
freaked out some Theban, people, man.
Well, I knew about that before. I think it was on his own board, maybe, or the image board. Somebody, it was Warren Ellis's board, the Theban type. But you had said that it was only half a sentence, so that you weren't going to get it anyway.
Explain yourself.
And actually, one of our posters, Amy in the UK, says, ask him if the words on the cover in Theban mean anything, because I'm getting nothing when I try and translate it.
I'm not going to say, because I think people should have to decode it themselves. A, it's kind of squiggly Theban. And if I remember rightly, McKelvey actually put it upside down. I believe it's actually upside down, so it's slightly harder to decode anyway.
That's why I didn't recognize it.
Is that what the Ouija board told him to do?
I tried to decode it and gave up. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense.
Please buy phonogram?
Yeah.
And actually, one of our other good friends of the show, Brian Bowles, is actually the one who told us to track that down. So I've got I'm going to get into a couple forum posts here and some questions. This is from Matt Kramer up in Wisconsin. He says, with each issue having a soundtrack, are the albums associated with each issue needed for full comprehension and enjoyment of the series, or will they just add to the book? That being said, the only one of the albums associated with the title that I own is Elastica's self-titled disc.
You should get the rest.
Really only kind of like that. So, sorry, go ahead, Karen.
Go, guest.
Sorry, I thought you were going to continue. I believe the comic is perfectly comprehensible and enjoyable without knowing any, you know, if you're an alien, you've never heard a pop record, and you've been locked in a tiny cell, you've never heard sound before, you know, just because you're a human being, you should be able to understand phonogram. And we deliberately, you know, Cole's quite useful because he's a very verbal character and he's a very ranty character, so he's quite good at getting exposition in naturally. And we've also got things like the glossary, and we deliberately get out of the way and say, you can go and listen to this, or this is a reference to whatever. But, it's like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You don't really need to know that what everyone is in every single panel to understand why it's a really great comic. So you can decode it and find your own messages there, and you maybe even find messages we never even put there. But, you know, in terms of actually being able to enjoy it, we think anybody should be able to pick it up and actually go through it, as long as they're willing to accept the idea that pop music can actually move people like that. Does that make sense?
I'll maybe try and add on to that a little bit, and I think that you're right on in that you don't have to have not just listen to these records, but worn a groove in them like I have with a lot of them. But I tell you what, if you loved the Afghan Whigs Gentleman record and really know what that record is about, the first half of this comic means a lot more, because you just by one of the opening quotes that Cole uses in the narrative sets him up that he's, I wouldn't say a He's not a sexual predator, but he is a sexual creature.
We're all sexual predators, Chris.
but that record gives me that understanding of exactly where he is. Would you agree, Kieran, or am I totally off base?
No, I would agree. You know, so I wrote it to it. You know, he quotes. He actively quotes the Afghan words twice towards the end. It's obviously kind of like a hymn to him, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's just like the man he wants to be. You know, in his head, that's at least the man he wants to be that night. And you know, the idea of going essentially to a feminist rock festival whilst thinking he's a member of the Afghan Whigs. You know, that's a statement in his own mind. So no, I agree entirely. You can get. I think the people who actually will fall in love with Phonogram the most, as in the people who go absolutely crazy obsessed over it, or we hope they will be the people who get the references. Yeah. They will understand that.
Well, we're obsessive, like so we love it.
But I think, you know, it's going to be perfectly entertaining without it, if it makes sense. But you're right, you know, we're trying to get the stances of the records, we're trying to get the idea that these are essentially pieces of scripture to these people, and they're trying to, you know, mirror bits. The personality in it.
Can you talk about that era of music and why it was you chose that particular time and style of music for this first miniseries?
Well, it's actually quite hard to actually work out why we've done the Britpop covers in the first issue, because we tried to make the first issue essentially standalone, because we kind of like, you know, it's modern day, we want to try to get the sensation of what's happening now, because the actual plot as such is kind of about memory and nostalgia, specifically. So we needed actually a sense of the present day, essentially. But when the actual plot starts rolling, which is essentially episodes 2 to 6, fundamentally it's about that. It's all about 94 to 96 in terms of looking back at it, if that makes sense. So since most of the plot circles around that period and what was interesting and important then, that's why we went for the 6 covers from the period. It's probably worth noting, though, that... It's more about memory and nostalgia generally. We're kind of interested in Britpop because essentially it's 10 years on from then. And if you're talking about nostalgia and memory, it's about that 10 years before things start being recycled or start being commented upon by pop media. So the fact that Britpop is, of course, the movement, it's the movement me and McKelvey were involved in.
Yeah.
It's also the movement that's kind of reached that point, so it makes a really good case study. I mean, we could have done the story about, I don't know, punk or hip or... Manchester or any other thing if you wanted, but it's just very timely and perfect to do it now, because it's kind of whilst the lessons we want to talk about are kind of universal, specifics really help, I think. But yeah, that's why Britpop album covers, because you know the story's about it essentially.
Well, it's interesting because it's to me why it rings more true is because it's the first thing musically that I went through myself that is now has nostalgia. You know, like, otherwise everything I'd ever experienced music-wise was actually really just nostalgia for something previously. But I remember when all that stuff came out, and now I've got the weird feeling nostalgia. Yeah,
it's the first time that you started making musical decisions that weren't your parents or weren't, you know, other influences in your life. They were your
yeah,
choice.
And I was a dick back then, so I completely understand.
Well, Kieran, we've talked about, you know, the concepts behind the work and a few of the different scenes that we really enjoyed. One thing I wanted to touch on was on the artwork, because I thought that Jamie McKelvey just did a fantastic job of penciling and working the story to match what your writing was. And I think Sal's kind of our resident art aficionado, but can you take a couple minutes and talk about Jamie McKelvey's work on this?
I would love to, yeah. I mean, McKelvey's kind of, he's sickening. He's a sickeningly talented young man, and he kind of gets better with every page, because it's like, and it makes me quite excited to actually what it's going to look like when we get to episode 4, episode 4 is absolutely fucking insane. But you know, and it's going to be really interesting how McKelvey deals with it. But he's kind of, it's awkward, from the first second I met McKelvey, it was like we were at Bristol Comic Con, and he just essentially showed me his portfolio, and I was pretty much the first thing I said to him, this is great, I've got a comic I'm working on that you would be perfect for. And his work then was nowhere near as advanced as it is now, but I could still, the kind of the basic elements which kind of makes, you know, Phonogram work for me, were all there. I mean, there's some really basic things he does, like he knows how people dress, you know, and he looks at people in the world, and he kind of like, okay, this is in, and this sort of cut of haircut would work. In the same way, like, you could read There's many comics written by, you know, Marvel or DC, which have teenagers in. They're not like teenagers. They've got no idea what teenagers look like. The Kelvin knows what teenagers look like. And that's one of the things that makes it absolutely convincing. And that's what, you know, and he's really good at body language, which is especially important, you know, for, you know, subtle gestures and that sort of stuff. And he's interested in people and telling stories.
Well,
you know, yeah.
One of the things that I thought is that, you know, that while you do have the supernatural in this book, it is really a pop culture book. It really deconstructs a lot of what we know, especially in our age group. I think everyone here is around 30, and it's very much a pop culture. And like you're saying, fashion is a huge part of pop culture. And, you know, just the whole scene in the beginning of him getting dressed and going through mentally what he should wear and why he should wear it. And, you know, it was so well put together. And I thought that the art conveyed that in a way that made your writing, you know, it created a world. And that's when writing and art, whenever it works together like that, makes a good comic.
That's basically why. Yeah, you're right. That's why I like McKelvey. You know, I can't really say anything about myself, but I see when the pages come back, it's absolutely like I wanted it. It's kind of like I mean, I've worked with different artists, and some artists, you know, bring something completely weird and unexpected. McKelvey, especially with the phonogram scripts, the scripts are ludicrous. They're, you know, incredibly over detailed panelled layout things. But, you know, and McKelvey actualizes the most ludicrously difficult things I've thought up perfectly, and it's, you know. Often better, you know, and it's like it's great. You know, it's fantastic to work with a man like that. I mean, it's great. I mean, you know, as a first, essentially, I mean, McKelvey did Long Hot Summer last year, but in terms of actually what seems like essentially a first work for both of us, it just feels really good. It's like it feels like a debut single by a band, and we like that. It's good. I'm very excited.
Well, to me, it reminded me a lot of two artists, Dave Gibbons for one, and the other was Gilbert Hernandez. And
McKelvey, I wish McKelvey was here because he would love to hear that.
Well, I just think
hear him sound embarrassed.
I think in the way that and I think it was the feel of it that I got the same way you get with Love and Rockets, of that scene and that era and that time, and it really put you in it. And I think it is that, you know, the details that he puts into it and the clothing, especially when you're talking about music and a music scene. I mean, clothing is probably, you know, the most important thing next to the music when it comes to that, you know, trying to convey that. And that's what I got out of it. I mean, Gibbons in a lot of his line work, but just that feel and the texture that he gave the story of putting me in back in that era and back in the clubs and back in, you know, listening to a band every weekend and following them around and that kind of thing. So
Put yourself in that culture.
It certainly did, and I thought it was a great job. I do wish he was here that we could ask him if he. I mean, I don't know. Do you know, it was he influenced at all by either one of those artists?
Was he? I mean, I don't think he was actually. I think he was more like influenced by Love and Rockets indirectly in that way, because he's kind of a lot of the only artists he's very influenced by. And of course, a lot of them are influenced by Love and Rockets. And Gibbons, I think Gibbons and stuff like that, especially as an English crowd, I think it's hard to get away from him, if it makes sense.
Sure.
I mean, the one thing you mentioned about his understanding of, you know, trying to put people in a place, it's another really good thing about working with him, in that he gets all the references and he understands the semiotics of clothing. And I won't need to explain why it's important for somebody having to wear something, because he knows entrance, and he'll put them in already, and he knows what sort of people will be in certain places. I mean, like the Ladyfest crowd scene is one of my favourite panels in the entire comic, because, you know, he's got very specific sort of stereotypes is probably the word, but an understanding the stereotypes, like he drops a Butch Dyke in at the back, and it's a really good Butch Dyke.
it's hard to do sometimes.
Well, yeah. I mean, once again, you're creating an atmosphere with this book through music, through, you know, your storytelling, and through the art, and it worked really well. Hey, I've got another question here, and it's actually by, I believe, a friend of yours, Sam, over in the UK, and he requested that we ask you to explain Phonogram using the analogy with Alan Moore and the Supremes.
Obviously, when I'm trying to work out how to pitch this, I'm sort of sitting desperately trying to brainstorm a high concept, because it's not a, it doesn't fit a high concept well, I think. I mean, you can get one, but it doesn't really tell the story. But one of the ones I came up with, which I thought was quite funny, though probably not that true, imagine Promethea if Alan Moore cared more about the hand claps in a Supremes record than the sock puppet he keeps in his bathroom, is the way I described it. But that's kind of... it's slightly glorifying. It's glorifying ourselves by comparing it to Promethea, and not really. And it's also kind of slightly insulting to Moore. And it's not really meant to be insulting. It's meant to be cute. So I've stopped using that one because somebody absolutely tore me a new one for using it. And then the idea, Promethea was an exploration of essentially Moore's metaphysics, in the same way that Phonogram is an exploration of mine and McKelvey's metaphysics. But our metaphysics, we care more about pop music than we do actual gods.
That was something I thought about too, and I was wondering, did you have any concerns with the book being, and I don't mean this in any sort of disparaging way, but being so British, selling in the U.S. and as, somewhat closed-minded as U.S. comic buyers may be?
We are not.
Well, I think there's two.
Batman is in this, right?
Well, there's two. To me, there were two things going through my head. Was one, are they worried because a lot of the music and the references and the scene is set in in the UK, and but also, do you have is there ever an issue where you can't get out of the shadow of other creators like Alan Moore or a Warren Ellis or whoever it may be? Is that ever something you concern yourself with or think about?
Yeah, all the time, but especially, is it too British? Yeah, it worries the hell out of me. it might be. I don't think about it. On the other hand, I can't get, these are kind of issues I can't even deal with because it's just part of what the story is and it's part of what the idea is. And I could try to work around it, but it essentially makes the work less true. And the fact that the work has to be true, otherwise it's nothing, if it makes any sense. Either it works or it doesn't. And if it, as I said, even if it's completely failed, it'll be an interesting failure, is what I've heard, what I generally say.
Well, here...
But I don't think it will.
I don't think so either.
Reading a book, and you had made the comparison of High Fidelity meets Hellblazer. Did you feel like High Fidelity, the novel, was a very British novel?
Yeah. Of course, and it worked well as a film version transplanted to the US as well, though.
People are obsessive everywhere.
Yeah, well, that was filmed in Chicago, so I guess that it's just people from Chicago that get it, right?
Listen to AroundComics.com podcast new every Monday. For once, you won't be lying to your parents when you tell them you're not looking at porn.
Sam had one more question, and he says, now a proper question. What would you say your influences when writing this book, and what do you want to do after Phonogram? Would you take a mainstream work, and what would you like to work on if you did? So that's a lot of questions there.
That's a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Sam, I was in the pub with Sam last night. You could have asked me there.
he's too shy.
One of the influences on Phonogram specifically, I think a lot, there's so many influences, it's kind of like you end up making extremely long lists. I was very influenced in comics by, it's kind of, since I sort of conceived it around 2003, captions weren't particularly in fashion, so I was kind of interested in the idea of trying to renovate captions as a narrative device, because it's like everyone's, the idea of comics as film, essentially. And I like comics as film, but I think, comics can be more than that, and I was trying to work out ways to be visual and try to use the medium, but without just trying to, ape special effects. It's stuff like, we use the rips across the page in issue one, for example. And we kind of, issue three, we use an optical illusion as a backdrop. Issue two, we do a lot of montage. The idea that you can do things which are visual and purely comics, but not moving, that was kind of like what we're thinking. In other words, Eddie Campbell was a big influence in that sort of thing. Eddie Campbell was a big influence generally. I mean, I kind of like, how he essentially, his Alex books are kind of mythologizing life, and life is lived, and it kind of, whilst it's both incredibly true, it's also kind of like he's telling a story and he's been quite playful with it. That was influenced, in the his steady, his steady angle shots were kind of like usually influential in that. I mean, it's odd because it's such a, it's a very British book, but kind of like the influences are very British too. I mean, you know, you list, you know, those English creators, sorry, those British creators whose names were E or M. you know, you can see a lot of all of them in there, I think. Yeah, it's such a, you know, there's too many people. Like, I'm ripping off so many people, it's kind of hard to form a list.
You have to, that's the secret, you have to steal from so many people that no one can figure out.
Can't peg it down.
No one can figure out all of them.
Well, on the mainstream question, first of all, do you have any aspirations to work for a mainstream Big Two book? And if you did, what would appeal to you?
You mean like 2000 AD?
No, not like
China. Oh, you mean U.S. mainstream.
U.S. mainstream.
Oh, sorry.
So, I don't know. Sam's from the U.K. He probably means one of the... What's big in the U.K.?
I don't know. I don't... Well, I want to...
All right, let him answer.
I'm saying Marvel or D.C.
Jesus.
Kieran, if you could... Do you want to? And if you could, what would you want?
Well, I think obviously I'm going to have to actually write Dazzler or something, don't I? I mean, I've got no real choice, do I? I could do it with Dazzler, I'm sure. I don't know. It's not something I even think about in that, I kind of, what's the word? I know a lot of people, the idea of essentially pitching something that takes so long, I'm like, and the idea of putting my creative energy into something which is essentially up to an editor whether it goes off, and essentially if it isn't picked up, it's entirely wasted. That doesn't usually interest me. I mean, I've got too many comics I want to write, essentially, you know, on my own, essentially, or like, you know, you know, I could be writing for the next 5 years and not, you know, not get the ones I've got currently. I think are worth doing. On the other hand, maybe, you know, I think I'm more suited to something like Vertigo, to be honest, because, you know, I'm English and swearing. But the thing is, real mainstream mean superheroes. I quite like superheroes, but I don't really have much interest in any of the big ones. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I
like the idea of the idea of introducing somebody with powers greater than the context and then running with it, but I don't really care about Batman. So yeah, I think I must admit, if I actually found myself wanting to do something in the mainstream, I'd probably think about it then. As in, it would occur to me, they'll say, I don't know, if I was asked, do you want to pitch something to us, I would actually then sit down and think what I wanted to do, and I think thinking about it before then is a kind of waste of effort, you know.
Sure.
You might as well be writing fanfic.
Well, and also, I mean, to some degree, maybe it's more trying to find a character that fits a story you have as opposed to thinking up a character you want to work on and then trying to create a story around it.
I'm so glad that I get to read a book like Phonogram instead of, and I'm a Spider-Man fan, but I'm so glad I get to read this instead of another rehashed Spider-Man. Yes, Tom. Yes, it's true. So, you know, I
was kind of thinking Phonogram, but with Spider-Man in it instead would be awesome.
Spider-Gram?
Yeah.
End the episode now.
Spider-Gram, the Phonomancer.
Stop down this track.
No, talking about today's comics, and the industry is changing. Creators that want to do their own work are getting the opportunity through companies like Image and Oni here in the United States, and Boom, and, you know, Ape, and, you know, we can list them off, but it's never going to be the Big Two over here. But as a creator, do you feel like there's more opportunities to tell the story that you want to say?
I mean, you know, I agree, and that's what makes it quite exciting at the moment. I mean, if I was, like, around 10 years ago, I wouldn't be doing something like Phonogram for my first book, you know? That's incredibly exciting. I think it's, you know, comics at the moment really do excite me, in terms of, like, comics generally, there's so many things that could possibly be at any point, and now there's all these sort of venues where people can try stuff. And I talk to my friends, you know, people like in the British scene or peers, and all of them are kind of doing different areas. Like, I know Alex Acampi, you know, she's off doing her French Bear BD stuff. And other people are going through different ways. You know, there's all these avenues, and it's a lot better than, of course, like 15 years ago. Essentially, we'd be like all pitching to 2000 AD. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that it's a great time for comics because there are so many opportunities, and we're lucky enough to have, you know, creators like you and Matt Fraction and a lot of others that are putting out, you know, terrific independent work that hasn't been around in a long time.
It's actually
good independent work. Let's not go overboard.
Talking about Matt, we were introduced to two books within about 2 weeks, and that was Casanova and Phonogram. And you want to talk about two works that are coming out that are completely different than anything else that you're reading out there. And Casanova came out this week. And Kieran, by the way, Matt, we got an email from Matt yesterday, and he sends his love.
Ooh. I sent him a little text, a lovely man.
he speaks very highly of you, so he's I know looking very forward to seeing Phonogram get out there and see how it goes. So.
I was very excited to actually get a physical copy of Casanova yesterday. You know, and it was just, you know, it's a beautiful object, and I just sort of like lobbed it at my girlfriend, insisted her she read it as well. It's, you know, it's a really good comic.
Oh, it's
did she actually read it, or did she just go, yeah, oh, okay?
No, she's a big comic fan. She used to work in comic shops and stuff. So yeah. In fact, she probably reads them. She has probably got better taste in comics than I do.
I understand. When, you know, for everyone out there, we haven't even talked about a release date. When does Phonogram hit comic shops?
August 2nd.
Be August 2nd. Okay.
So yeah. it's in this month's, or no, is it in this month's previews, or was it in last month's previews?
I think it was in last month's previews. It's the one that's just coming off now, and issue 2 will be in the one that's about to come out.
Right.
Okay. So, now, how many issues is it slated to run in this first series?
Six-part miniseries.
Okay, Nan, are you already working on plans to bring Phonogram back after that, or is it just going to be a six-issue mini?
It's kind of like, in fact, you know, I designed the metaphor to be actually quite robust. So, you know, if it does well, I've got, you know, if it does well, I would like to do something else, and McKelvey would as well. And I've got a couple of quite hefty ideas I think might justify a miniseries, and a load of other small ones. And it's kind of like, when I invented it, the idea that it could be a tool I could return to at any point, as in if I had something to say about music and a plot that actually worked with it, I could actually come back and do it at any point. I don't know, I quite like the idea that if I, you know, carry on doing comics, I could be like, I could suddenly be 55 in like Alan Moore's position and like, I'm going to do another Phonogram comic. because it's essentially a device to see the world. And it's kind of worth noting is just because David Cole's the lead character in this story doesn't mean he'll be the story lead character the next, in that essentially it's a world rather than actually a character point, if that makes sense.
That is exciting, because you have, it could be one Phonomancer after another in different miniseries.
And I also like the idea of essentially, I don't like comics where anyone's sure someone's going to survive, if that makes sense. I like the idea of, you know, dangerous and drama, and, you know, I could kill off anybody at any time, sure, one way or the other, because it's drama and it's a lot more exciting, I think.
No spoilers. We don't want to know.
Can't wait until the next podcast? Be sure to check out AroundComics.com for breaking news, reviews, and opinions.
Well, Kieran, it's coming out August 2nd, six-issue miniseries. It's by Image. Sal, Tom, do you guys have any more questions for Kieran?
I liked it.
Yeah, I
thought it was.
God bless you.
Well, you've sold three copies here, and
I ordered it already out of previews.
We're very excited.
I've read it, but it's just like I said, I think I'm maybe, you know, one of the worst case scenarios that you might run against as far as someone who's not deeply into music, and I wasn't sure going into it how much of it I would get or how much of it I wouldn't get, but it didn't matter. I mean, it was just a well-written story, an interesting concept, and something that had characters that you identified with and at the same time were interested to find out more about. So to me, it was just a great first offering. It was cool. It was very cool.
It was a very neat story. So,
I did.
So, Kieran, thank you so much for being here today. We're gonna chart how Phonogram does here in Chicago, and we're gonna continue to push it and talk about it. It really is a nice piece of work. So, I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
No, it's been really good. It was really good to talk to you. To be honest, I just like talking. Bollocks, really.
and know that, know that you are welcome back on Around Comics anytime to talk comics that you would like.
Hey, Karen, one thing, I know you have, there's a Phonogram, is it Phonogram the Comic or PhonogramComic.com, the website?
PhonogramComic.com, yes.
And there's
that's
other,
a nice site.
Yeah, it's very, a nice site, and there's other information if you want to know more about the site. And Jamie has his own site with some artwork and stuff, and I know Karen has a site too that I've been poking around in the last couple of days. So there's plenty of information out there about Phonogram if we haven't convinced you at this point.
Mm-hmm. So Karen, any last?
Actually, do you mind if I quickly plug McKelvey's other work?
I was just going to ask you if you had anything else to throw in. So it's
quickly
the floor is yours.
Quickly though,
I'll be very quick.
No,
take your time.
Just kidding.
Thank
it's
your
just
time.
Tom.
McKelvey, after he's done Phonogram, his next project is called Suburban Glamour, which is just a graphic novel coming through Image as well, and that's kind of about. It's kind of a coming-of-age sort of story involving a girl who is incredibly, incredibly punk rock. So yet again, it's punk rock girls, which is McKelvey's strong point, clearly. and it's great. It's another urban fantasy comic, but it's, you know, written and drawn by him. It's very exciting, really. And he's got some work on his side, if anyone's interested in seeing how that goes. In fact, it was all those 3 years ago, the first page he showed me was actually a page from an early version of Suburban Suburban Glamour when he was working on it, so you know it all ties together nicely.
And what's the you know, I was on your site today, and there was a really interesting book you had done a couple stories in, something suicide.
Oh, Commercial Suicide.
Commercial Suicide. Yeah, that was something you had written a few. Is that like an anthology piece?
Yeah, it's me and Alex DeCampi. It was somebody else's idea originally, but Alex picked up and I sort of joined in, and we basically co-edited it. Essentially, it was in a kind of low, like, you know, pro, semi-pro, and absolute amateur creators just doing this anthology, and it's incredibly obscene. As in, I think it's the sort of thing we'll probably both be embarrassed about in 20 years' time.
Well, I know you can order it on your site there, and I'm going to order a copy because I was intrigued, and I love the incredibly obscene. So.
Nice. For our listeners over here in the States and in the UK, are you planning any convention stops this year?
Conventions? Both me and McKelvey at San Diego, actually. So that's 2 weeks, about 10 days before Phonogram comes out. So we're sharing a table with Matt Fraction, actually. So that's going to be our kind of glorious coming out into the comic world.
Oh, awesome. Well,
I've never done San Diego, so I'm entirely a virgin.
Oh, you've never been to San Diego Con?
No, it's going to be interesting. I'm going there with a comic, and I expect to go naked or something. It's going to be interesting.
You'll be dressed up like Hawkman before you know it.
You're probably
Who was I joking to? I was saying I'm going to end up in a Power Girl outfit or something. It's going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah, she's famous now. But you're probably a very pale English man, and it's very sunny in San Diego. Bring your sunblock.
Yes, white suit, Panama hat, small cane. It's going to be the Englishman abroad.
Taking a trip out to the colonies.
I've come to reclaim.
Your women. I've come to reclaim your women.
I will take you in an enormous, enormous vat thing and bring you back to my home.
Take a dirigible home.
Well, it's our goal. We want to get out to the Bristol Con either next year or the year after, so maybe we'll be able to either hook up with you out there or the next time that you come over to the States, because we'd love to meet you in person.
That'd be good, yeah. Hopefully.
Right. Can we stay with you?
in Bristol, you say?
Yes.
Since I live in Bristol, I do have people crash on the floor at the con, so it's not unprecedented.
We're easy to accommodate. I curl up very small.
Well, if you're ever in Chicago, you're more than welcome at Chris's.
Excellent.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show, and really good luck with Phonogram. I know we all enjoyed it, and we hope that you have a lot of success with it.
Yeah, I think it's going to do well. So thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you, and thanks for the forum to be able to speak.
All right, absolutely.
Our pleasure.
All right, we'd like to thank Kieran Gillen for being on the show. We're going to let him go for the evening. We're going to move over to the news desk for Wire to Wire Comic News. But please make sure to hang around after the news, because we have another special guest coming up on the show.
Shop headlines for the week of May 19th, 2006. Dynamite Entertainment announced that they have rescheduled the first trade paperback release of Eduardo Risso's Borderline. The first trade collection will now be available in September. For the first volume, Dynamite has secured the services of creator Ivan Brendan to provide the translation and script from Spanish to English. Pulp noir in the tradition of Sin City and 100 Bullets, Borderline, originally published in Italy, is a 600-page epic created by Risso and Carlos Trillo, with whom the artist had previously worked on a slate of other projects. This powerful piece of graphic fiction has never before been available in the United States in English. Volume 1 weighs in at an impressive 160 pages and ships in September. Reintroducing the Atlas characters from the 1950s in grand manner, Marvel is hosting an interactive scavenger hunt on the internet and in comic stores that allows fans to unlock parts of an exclusive online story leading up to the 6-issue limited series Agents of Atlas. It is believed that Marvel is publishing Agents of Atlas, a 6-issue limited series reuniting Marvel heroes from the late 1950s, featuring Jimmy Woo, Venus, the Human Robot, Marvel Boy, and Gorilla Man. A game hint, Marvel.com is the first stop on the hunt. For their freshman outing, new publishing company Paper Dragons announced that the 4-issue sci-fi noir series 48 will make its debut at the Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina, June 30th through July 2nd. 48 will be the first of 3 intended limited series from the newest publisher on the scene and will be followed later in the year by Stephen Forbes and Dave Simmons' Bullet Time and Fallen Justice. 48 takes place roughly 30 years from now and is the story of 23 clones who escape from a cloning facility and attempt to survive in the wild for a period of 4 years, or 48 months, until a loophole in the laws governing citizenship allow them to officially petition for rights. The story also tracks the lives of 2 last chance cops who are assigned to investigate a murder that they were never meant to solve. When their paths inevitably cross those of the clones, all bets are off. This title is scheduled for a July 1st release, with writing by Carrie Kelly and complete art by Jeff Mose. It will retail for $3 and be 40 pages black and white with a color cover. After Hours Press announced Impossible Tales, a new comic book series that mixes sci-fi, adventure, and mythology in a high-energy action series. All Impossible Tales stories will be told in 2-issue arcs. In the first story, a young genius from the future becomes a fugitive in time when he discovers the secret to time travel. In the race for his life, he accidentally strands himself, along with a luxury cruise ship and crew, 65 million years back in time. Frank Cho and Image Comics are bringing a whole lot of brandy for their fans. It all kicks off with Liberty Meadows Cover Girl, a 128-page full-cover hardcover that will retail for $24.99. For the first time, every single one of Frank Cho's covers for the Liberty Meadows comic, from the single issues to the trade paperbacks and then some, is collected in one deluxe hardcover. "I'm pretty excited about this book," says Cho. "It's great to have all my Liberty Meadows covers and pinups in one fat volume, since I'm even missing some of the early issues." Liberty Meadows Cover Girl features an all-new cover, plus a behind-the-scenes look at the development of some of your favorite images of Brandy and the gang, from rough sketch to full color. ICV1.com is reporting that, spurred by sales of Marvel's Civil War and DC's Weekly 52 series, periodical comics sold in North America through Diamond Comic Distributors had their best month ever since IVC2 began tracking comic sales, soaring 38% above the total for May of 2005. Civil War No. 1 debuted at No. 1, displacing DC's Infinite Crisis, and all 4 weekly issues of DC's 52 made the top 10. 13 titles sold over 100,000 copies in May, almost twice as many as topped 100,000 in April. After 2 months of decline due to the Sin City effect that drove graphic novel sales in 2005, graphic novels posted a modest 3% gain in the May 2006 versus 2005. Overall, sales of both comics and graphic novels were up 32% versus May of 2005. and the dollar total is the highest dollar amount registered by the comic market since ICV2 has been compiling these numbers. Warren Ellis has finally revealed the TV project he's been alluding to in his Bad Signal newsletter. I've been engaged with the American cable company AMC to write the half-hour pilot for a TV series I created. As with all TV things, anything could go horribly wrong, but this is the deal I've been waiting for with the people who understand the project and format I want to work in. And you know something's going right when people in TV are telling you to go more experimental and take more risks. This isn't your U.S. network TV experience. I'm writing the pilot at the moment, and I should particularly thank Joss Whedon and John Rogers for the insights into the process. More details will hopefully follow as the project progresses. Or, you know, a tear-stained screed if it doesn't. Fan favorite artist Howard Chaykin has officially been announced as the artist on the launch of the upcoming Blade series alongside Mark Guggenheim. Chaykin, probably best known for his American Flag series, is ready to take the Vampire Hunter to new heights as he combines horror with superheroics. Mark Guggenheim is thrilled at the chance to be working with Chaykin. "I've been a longtime fan of Howard's work," says Guggenheim. "His American Flag and Blackhawk series were incredible inspirations to me. He has a dynamic, exciting style that has remained an original voice that I have yet to see any artist duplicate. That's a very rare thing in comics." Blade number 1 will hit shelves on September 20th. These have been your top headlines for the week of June 19th, 2006. For the full version of these and other stories, please go to www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions. And those are your top headlines for the week. Before we jump into the news, I'd like to introduce another panel member. We let Kieran Gillen go back to his pub hopping ways.
His English ways.
He was working very hard. He wasn't
sneaky
drinking.
English.
He was drinking tea. It's 2 a.m. over there.
2 a.m.
Yeah, it was very nice of him to stay up and babble on with us.
Absolutely. You know. Well, one of the advantages of recording where we do is that we have all of these amazing people that will walk in and say howdy, and then we handcuff them, stuff them in a chair, and make them be on the show. So I'd like to introduce
Don't forget the gag ball.
No, we can't put the gag ball in because they have to talk.
We can't put it in their mouth.
Take it out of his mouth.
You're dying to get that explicit tag.
Sometimes those special people escape.
I would like to introduce our special guest for the second half of the show, Mr. John Suntress, the host of Word Balloon.
Gentlemen. Pleasure.
Hey. I'm going to applaud after we see what he does.
Exactly. I don't blame him.
The elder statesman of podcast interview shows.
I remember when we used to download them to giant computers on cards.
Edison gave us his cylinder, and we, of course, advanced.
You had to wait for a lightning strike to listen to it.
Well, if this will ring hollow, I would say if you are not familiar with Word Balloon, but that
at
probably
www.wordballoon.com.
Wordballoon.com.
I couldn't believe the URL was open. I'm like, oh, good.
You know, you can check the value. What was the value we found around comics today?
Yeah, there's some website where you like punch in your URL and it'll tell you how much it's worth. We were like around comics worth like $47,000 or something.
What?
Like,
oh, actually,
yeah. Wait.
Who's gonna spend?
How much is TomCaters.com?
Where's title number two?
Yeah. TomCaters2.
We are retiring and moving to some island. So.
Nice, gentlemen.
But anyone who hasn't listened to Word Balloon, which,
island.
You know, everyone's listened to Word Balloon. John, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and how awesome your show is?
You're very kind. It's very basic. It's a one-on-one interview show. It's me talking to comic creators, sci-fi writers, TV writers, film people. I mean, it's whoever I can get that kind of fits that pop culture genre that we all enjoy so much. And it's been a blast. I've been doing it for about a year.
You get great guests. You get everyone.
No, he gets every guest.
Every guest. I haven't had Stan yet. Stan, you won't come on. I don't have 100,000 people listening.
I just lie to him. How would he know?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. They're all on now. Stan, we're on the network right now.
We hit 100,001. Your time is now.
The word. No, but I would love Stan. Please, if you are listening, yeah.
Well, the thing I like about you...
I don't think there's any danger of that, John.
I don't think so. Stan Lee just threw his iPod against the wall.
If I could name drop. When I was talking to Brian Michael Bendis.
Oh, here he goes. Yes, I remember Bendis. That day. Bendis' little boy. Yes.
But yeah, I said something about Frank Miller. I'm like, yeah, there goes my chance with Frank Miller. And he's like, dude, like Frank Miller's actually listening to this crap. And I'm like, yeah, you're right.
True. All right. Well,
we can offend anyone because they don't listen.
We actually do talk about the news in this segment.
Oh, okay.
Due to some requests by some folks, and I think very good requests, we're going to abbreviate the news a little bit. We're not going to go over every story. We're just going to hit the ones that we like, which will probably be every story.
We had thousands
to punish
of
them, we're actually going to talk
right
more.
Right off the top, there's Eduardo Rizzo's Borderline, which is published in Italy, but was in Spanish. Now, Ivan Brendan is working to edit and translate that.
He's been a busy boy of late. Oh, Ivan Brendan. He's getting all over the place, man. He's doing that book with Oming now.
Suspicious.
Cross Bronx. And
was he still NYC Mech?
NYC Mech. Yes. But he's got 24/7, that anthology he put together, all about robots, and he's getting
something's
around.
Something's going on that I'm a little suspicious of with him.
There's cloning maybe involved.
Performance enhancing comic editing drugs.
Have you guys dipped into a lot of European comics? Because it really is like when Humanoids and DC had that deal.
Uh-huh.
I like went nuts and got so many trades, and I am such a fan. And it's so nice to see other genres represented as they are in European comics. And Rizzo, I've been loving a lot of his stuff and finding South American books and stuff like that he's done. He's just great.
Well, maybe we can get Frank Miller having Batman fight the French.
Well, yeah, talking about some South American creators from Brazil, Gabriel Ba and his brother. Fabio Moon. Gabriel Ba from Casanova. Awesome. Awesome stuff.
Yeah, you know, I just put it in my pile right here at Dark Tower.
They have a trade.
I've come to buy as well as... join you, gentlemen.
Yeah, well, taking advantage of the 20% off discount.
Throwing money and words around.
So Rizzo's Borderline coming out. It's been pushed back to September, but it's 160 pages. Looks great. Agents of Atlas Scavenger Hunt.
It's got Gorilla Man.
You were talking about this a minute ago.
Yeah, Rick Parker told me about that. It's on the Marvel blog, and I think they were having a contest and to help draw up interest for this. Very cool little miniseries that I think highlights great 50s Atlas characters. And they were, of course, the stars of that great what-if story of the Avengers of the 1950s. And it was a cute little blip of a story. And, of course, they made that return in Avengers Forever, the Cute Bustic Roger Stern story. So I'm looking forward to it. I think Jeff Parker is a great adventure writer and a great spy writer. I think it's in good hands.
I'm a sucker for that stuff. Like,
you're a S.H.I.E.L.D. fan, too?
Well, any, like, 50s, anything, like, lost characters, like Freedom Fighters from D.C., stuff like that.
This is our Mr.
Silver
Age, man.
That's cool. That stuff is great. It's like a little...
If it doesn't have Wolverine in it, I don't buy it. Oh, hush.
I'm sure he'll make an appearance.
The easiest fix that Marvel can make, and I still don't get it, the bad guy is the Yellow Claw, which was a Marvel character, and a Fu Manchu knockoff that Timely could use and exploit. Why don't they make Shang-Chi the son of the Yellow Claw? I don't get it. Ooh. I don't get it. And I
Marvel,
ask,
are you listening?
I ask these guys all the time. I ask Galassi. I talked to Paul Galassi the other day. Every time I drop, I'll go in my William F. Buckley voice. Yes, you know, at the Algonquin Club, yes, Paul Galassi was mentioning
Galassi.
It over cognac.
Why?
Yes. Wouldn't it make sense, lad? Please talk to the powers that be. So...
All right, you jokers. 48 coming out from Paper Dragons. I made sure to put this story in just because it sounds like a great concept. Clones that have to go live in the wilderness for 48 months so they can get around a legal loophole. And two, like, burnout cops.
All right.
Cool. Put it together, add a little bit of... Who's doing it? whoever it is.
What? Great concept. Hey, anything like that, you know.
It doesn't say. Well, I'm sure it's good.
For $3, you know.
And it's 40 pages for $3.
So yeah, absolutely. You know, it's got a little Blade Runner in it.
That's exactly what I smelled. But yeah,
iRobot. A little iRobot.
Smell that Blade Runner.
You know, so hey, $3.
Can you smell what the...
Impossible Tales is coming from After Hours Press. What I like about Impossible Tales is that they're going... Every story that comes out from this is going to be a two-shot. So it's two issues, you know, two and done. So
that's cool.
Yeah. It's
time
nice.
Time travel's good.
Everyone who complains about decompression, get in two issues.
All right. Enough of this crappy news story. Let's get to some real good news, which is fan favorite artist.
The May sales.
No, fan favorite artist Howard Chaykin has officially been announced as the artist to launch the upcoming Blade series. And
how about that?
I everyone knows I'm a huge fan.
Frank took his shirt off.
I love Ron Howard, and he's a great guy.
And you're having him on soon, I hear.
Yes, it's in the works, and got the green light, and that's great. So we haven't picked a date yet, but we hope to announce an engagement soon. The invitations will be in the mail.
Can you ask him when he's going to do another Black Kiss?
Absolutely. No, I am curious, because, you know, did you like American Century? Did you like American Century when he wasn't doing the art?
I did like it. But not as much.
I agree.
I liked it, but I didn't like it as much.
And it was kind of missing that pop that he gives when he designs a page. And taking nothing away from those stories, but yeah.
Yeah, when he does everything, that's when he's at his best. I like his writing. I love his art. But separate, when they're apart, they're not as good as when they're together.
Right.
And when he's when he's doing everything, it's just...
No, I agree. And I'm digging Hawkgirl as well.
I love Walter. He's done with that, right?
See, I didn't like he's leaving Hawkgirl, I hear.
For Blade.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Oh, okay, I didn't realize after the arc and everything, so I didn't know that was part of the story.
Yeah. Now and I'm I really know excited about his Captain story. America.
Yes.
Well, Avengers. What is that? Is that the next issue of Avengers?
It's coming up. I know it's part of the Civil War.
Isn't it coming out next week? Is it 21?
It might. Yeah.
It's coming out next week.
Oh, wow. There you go.
New Avengers came out this week.
There's another one coming out next week.
Civil War, I guess.
There's another one coming out next week.
They're pushing them out heavy.
Oh, nice. They're trying to get over those May sales figures.
I guess.
Which could be the next story.
And it's going to be written by Mark Guggenheim, who...
Oh, which I loved in the Wolverine Civil War.
Yes.
Crossover. I
thought he did a really nice job on that.
I do want to go back and touch on one story.
No.
And that
finger
waving. Warren Ellis, right? Writing another.
Come on, man. AMC. Warren Ellis. He's writing for AMC.
Warren Ellis.
He's going to do a pilot, and that should be interesting. I know he's got a novel coming out, too, he's been talking about on his Bad Signal newsletter.
He's another
newsletter.
One who's suspiciously busy.
Well, he doesn't do anything
comic
else. He
enhancing
doesn't
drugs.
Leave his house for the other word. He goes to the pub and writes and that drinks and that's all he does.
I think also in England there isn't that stigma that's still here in the States where it's like as long as I'm writing it's fine. If I'm writing a play, if I'm writing a radio play, if I'm writing a comic book, if I'm writing a TV pilot, it's writing. And I really think the English market's more receptive. And also it's cool that AMC is getting more into original programming. They've imported that one British series, that con man series called Hustle.
Well, I mean, to be honest, playwrights are just losers. Just in general. I mean, if you're writing a play, just
Tom.
Like, who writes plays?
This is our improv.
Yeah,
no,
he writes playwrights.
Oh, that's all right. There's nothing
but,
wrong with improv.
But, you know, one thing that I...
There's nothing... It's
Chicago,
that,
man. That's
Chicago.
That's the birthplace of improv.
Local flavor. Like
but they don't use scripts. That's what Tom's... You know, he's got all anything with a script.
Oh, it had nothing to do with that. It's just like every playwright I meet is like... Typical
like a Sandman
comic
fan?
Book. No, I'm kidding. I've never met a playwright, so if you're a playwright listening to this.
Yeah, and like around comics, which is all scripted. So
the writers
are good. But Schulberg has been on Word Balloon. I'd like to point that out.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Screenwriter and playwright. But
that's true. I'm well, I apologize.
He's great.
God damn
well, he's 93. It's all right. I'm sure he's not listening.
Seriously. If you guys,
he doesn't know.
If you guys want to really...
While I was talking to him.
Yeah. He didn't hear the episode
what?
He was
again?
On.
Again? Say it again. Joe Louis, bud. Yes, a good fighter. Go ahead. He's the man. I love Bud Schulberg. He's the man.
He kicked Joe Louis' ass.
Exactly.
Rocky Marciano.
Bud Schulberg, the man who wrote, I could have been a contender. I could have been.
Oh,
so.
No, that's
He wrote On the Waterfront. Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
He's
still alive? I didn't even realize he was
which
still
alive. Yes, which is amazing. Wow. He's still sharp. He's amazing. Anyway, back to
the
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Sorry, I know we got off the
comic. It's not
even a comic. It's not a comic.
You haven't read the comic book adaptation.
Are we done with the news?
No, the big sales.
May.
The big sales.
Why are you blowing it off?
It's huge news, man.
Sounds like moving along.
Okay, well, you were going over like paper. dragons.
48 sounds awesome, dude.
I think it sounds like an
interesting. It sounds pretty interesting. It's no Howard Chaykin on Blade, but
true.
May sales, you can go back and listen. We got it on the site. But May sales, I think, bolstered by Civil War and the end of Infinite Crisis
was in 52.
Just a deluge of deluge.
A flood.
A lot of very impressive comics. And May sales were, I mean, we're talking, you know, going back to like 1990s numbers on this. So
high tide floats all boats.
What did they sell?
Well, and the distinction, obviously, and who said it while we were on the break, that the obviously as opposed to the previous.
People are only, you know, people aren't buying 8 copies of Civil War wrapped in bags, you know.
Right. They're actually buying it because they're reading them, which is great.
I mean, that's impressive, and, sure. And it's great for the industry that, you know,
you're
not going to lose all those buyers, hopefully.
They had 13 100,000 copy issues.
It's amazing.
That's unbelievable.
Which is, yeah, that's great.
I mean, 100, I mean, it used to be 100,000.
You'd have two. You'd have, you know,
four.
Well, like 7 or 8 years ago, 100,000. Was like the top comic.
Oh, yeah.
You know what's amazing? That you look at those 13, and I bet you look back 15 years, even if you don't like all those books, man, they are better than stuff was in those boom years. Like, the stuff you don't even read. Even, like, the stuff you would be like, oh, that's not that good for now. Man, that stuff would have blown away things, you know, years and years ago.
It underscores that. I'm not saying that the industry is all the way back or people are rushing into their comic stores
or
online.
It's a good place to be.
But it's a good time.
But you got to remember, all the way back is selling in the millions.
Yeah,
I mean, World War II era. Yeah,
right, absolutely.
I mean, that's a whole different, you know.
Yeah, but
90s was a blip.
And that was for a dime, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other interesting thing is with the price point, the $3 average price point and everything, I think that is a testament that the quality is there. But I'm afraid that the money and the price point is reaching another ceiling where everyone is going to say, I don't know if I'm going to spend, like, I think $350 we can handle, but $4? I don't think so.
No.
See, that's why I'm really excited about that Image Slimline stuff that LS and Fraction
are
doing.
Yeah,
I think that's it. Interesting avenue to go down. I hope that stuff sells well, because I think.
Well, I think maybe anthologies, you're going to see that. And we're getting into a whole different show here.
Sure.
I think that you're probably going to start seeing, hopefully, some anthologies where, hey, I wouldn't mind dropping $6 to get 6 comics in an anthology, and maybe they mix it up.
I mean, one of my favorite books right now is Negative Burn.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, you get 5, 6, 7 stories for whatever it is. I don't even know. They think they're selling it for $6.
Yeah.
And they're all good, you know, good quality stories. Yeah, it's not, you know, mainstream stuff. But for me, you know, I love it. It's, you know, it's a change of pace, and I can, you know, for $6 as opposed to $3 for one story that I may or may not like depending on the month. You
sure.
Know?
I mean, felt that way about The Escapist, too. Although, obviously, the format didn't work because they're switching to a 22-page monthly or 32 pages.
The price point was a little...
Yeah, it was. It was $9, but it was a high-quality $9 book.
It was,
and you got a lot of content for $9. So, and I really, it's funny, I didn't believe in that until I read the trade in the digest form, and it was $17, but I thought it was worth it because I was just impressed with the quality and everything that was in it. I thought it was great.
You think about how many books you buy in a week that... for $3 that are totally disposable. You read it, you bag it, you put it in the box, and you never pull it.
I burn mine. I burn all. I burn everything.
Sacrificially.
I make my own comic books
out of the
pieces I cut out of them.
Nice.
How else am I going to get the Flash to fight Wolverine? This is not going to happen. Flash wins, by the way.
Wait, you didn't?
Wow.
Flash wins.
Way to spoil, man.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Yeah, Flash wins. But what Flash was it?
That was Barry Allen. He's a good guy.
Wow.
Wolverine's
you know, I do, with that, okay, I'm going to throw out a spoiler there because everyone's like, oh, spoiler. We got the news this week. We got to talk about Spider-Man.
We do?
The unmasking.
Oh, shit. Spoiler? It was on every...
Cats out of
I saw someone with a tattoo of it.
Okay. but really, I just want to go by each person, and because every podcast,
everyone's commented on it?
Everyone's going to talk about it. I just want to get your real quick initial reaction. Tom, what do you think about Spider-Man's unmasking?
I think that it is good, because I know people are concerned that it... destroy something within the character, but 10 years from now, if someone's writing and doesn't like it, they'll just undo it. That's what happens in comics, and it's not. That's one of the strong points of comics, is you can fix whatever you want in comics. You don't have to worry. So why not? Let it go. See what happens. Maybe good squares will come from it, so I'm right, cool with
Sal?
It.
With me, I'm just sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop, because I don't think that they will leave it like that, because too many people will complain, and it changes. Personally, I don't believe this, but
they
a lot of people
complained whenever he graduated high school.
Well, true enough, but that's a little different than
never have lost
changing the you know, archetype of that character. And true. That's what you're doing. And there was a really good post on somebody on a blog. I can't remember. It was somebody posted a link to it on our forum, and it was someone talking about that and changing, you know, what that character means, and without the duality of Spider-Man and Peter Parker, now it's one character. You lose what that character is all about. And I agree to that to some terms, but to me, you have 40 years of history, so you're never going to completely lose that. But I just don't think Marvel's going to leave it where Peter Parker, everyone knows Peter Parker is Spider-Man. It's not going to happen. There's no chance. So I'm just waiting at some point how they're going to, you know,
cover that. No more people remembering Peter Parker.
Well, yeah, it's like Wanda. Right.
Exactly. Cosmic Cube away from being solved.
Exactly.
I want to take the Cosmic Cube and stuff it up.
But at the same time, I'm enjoying it. I enjoyed, you know, it was like
well, it's something different.
It was wow. A wow moment. Right. It was a wow, you know, it was like what that, you know.
It was a wow moment for Jay Jonah, I'll tell you that.
That was hilarious.
That was
really fun.
That was great.
And it's in the right hands too.
Well, John, we'll go to you. Your thoughts on the unmasking?
I'm kind of in Sal's camp. I think it's the initial incident. Let's see what the consequences are, and I can't judge it until I see what the consequences. But regardless, I have no problem with that, and I also agree that it's something that can easily be fixed. If you want to look at history, everyone is arguing about Peter Parker and Mary Jane being married. Everyone is arguing about Lois and Superman being married. This is one of those kind of moments. Does it serve the character forever? But I agree with Sal. I think that we've got to wait for the other shoe to drop before you really judge. And I think, I got no problem with it. And I think, again, it's in good hands. And that's just the great thing in general, and it kind of spins into the May story as well, that, you know, the writing's never been better. So I trust these guys. And if it's a shit... If it's a crappy story...
You can say shit.
I didn't know, because I know you guys are...
We're not on the radio.
All right, well, that's true. I always forget. But if it is a shitty story, then so be it. That's okay, and you know you walk away from a shitty story.
Well, I think that's
Straczynski did. I mean, we were all pissed off about the Mary, you know, the Gwen clone story and everything, and Gwen getting knocked up by
Harry
Osborn.
You just don't read those issues ever again.
Well, no, and it's that's an incident that'll sit there, and people either acknowledge it or not. This is a little bit deeper, obviously, because it's an unmasking.
Sure,
you fix it
or
you don't.
But I think you made a great point: is that it's in good hands, and we should give them some trust because of what they've done. I mean, if this was, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and some of the, you know, what was going on.
Miller's
but right
great.
Now, yeah, I mean...
Miller just came off 12 great issues. I loved the Marvel Knights Spider-Man. I thought he did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing, I like Straczynski as well.
The only complaint I had about it is what they didn't leave May dead. That was my only complaint, is that series would have been so much better.
If Sidney Bristow can get out of the grave, so
well,
can
yeah,
I got no problem with that.
You know,
well,
she did on Alias.
For me, I want to see where the character goes. It's a before and after moment for a character that we've known for pretty much our entire lives and known the same character for our entire lives. I'm looking forward to the after unmasked Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Well, it's something that interests me. I'll pick it up. I'll read it. I'll buy it. And that's exactly why they're doing it.
Yeah.
And I'll throw this out there. You want to see Peter Parker with his identity intact? Buy Ultimate Spider-Man.
Well, here's what that's I say. If you want to see Peter Parker wearing glasses... Go back to like the first four or five issues. I can't read Spider-Man without glasses.
He needs the big thick glasses. No, but you know, or they'll reboot again or whatever.
Well, that'll happen. I mean, that's comic books. That's exactly part of what frustrates us, but it's at the same time it's part. What's great about it is that they're locked into some.
Imagine if every crappy
ideology.
Decision. Imagine if every crappy decision had to be followed.
He'd still be driving a spider buggy.
Did you guys read the most recent Superman Batman with Huntress and Power Girl?
I looked at it because Kevin Maguire.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know Bendis borders are like, what was this story? I don't get it. I don't understand. What is it? And it's like, it's an Earth 2 story. Well, what do you mean it's an Earth 2 story? Infinite Crisis.
It's just a story.
It's like, no, that's like one of the good byproducts of Infinite Crisis. now they've reestablished the Earth 2 stuff happened. So if you want to go back and have a story like the Superman Batman story, you can. Well, and I mean, that's the thing.
And you know what, guys?
Did anybody read the New Avengers? I know you
not
did,
yet.
Chris.
Yes. Sitting on my phone.
I haven't yet. Well, you know, the whole, and I don't want to spoil it.
I saw
Magneto
on the cover. It's cool. You can. It's
but
right.
Zorn.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, they finally addressed.
Yeah,
well,
I don't want to spoil it for you, but Zorn.
Well, they've been deconstructing Grant stuff for years.
But,
so,
yeah, but I mean, finally, you know, it's like Bendis, you know, had the balls to go and revisit that character in some ways and
cool.
sort of.
It's awesome.
Explain.
End it. And, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and like, and,
be like,
you know, it's like
okay,
actually,
good. It's been dangling for years.
Really?
Right.
You know I will mean? Get and that issue because that pissed me off more than anything.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you'll like it, but.
No,
you know,
but I think
it,
it's
so.
That New Avengers was probably the not the first one out of the series, but that was the most Avengers story.
Oh, that's cool.
Issue that ever. It's like it was the it was the first
team
time I felt like it was the team battling a big bad.
It was one of the few Bendis books I've ever read that I went, wow, that could have went on longer.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean. It's like right. I mean, yeah. not you know, and I'm not a anti decompression.
I think it was ghostwritten by Miller.
Maybe. But you know, it was like, wow, that, you know, that could have kept going on.
I've heard
Bendis
say it was written by Kirkman.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Well, I tell you what, guys. Let's go ahead and wrap up the news.
Okay.
It was kind of a fun week for that. So that's your news. It's time to move on to Top of the Stack. That's right. It's Top of the Stack. Our chance to let you, the listener, know what our panel has been reading for the last week. Who would like to start off with their Top of the Stack?
I'll go first.
Ooh. You go, Tom Caters.
I am going to do my Top of the Stack as far as comic books go. I'm going to give you a bonus one.
Uh-oh.
Along with mine. All-Star Superman.
Is that free or is that a variant? Or
it's free.
Is it a sketch?
Free, but with donations if you want to donate for the extra one. I'm doing All-Star Superman number 4.
Again?
Yeah, I have to. It was so good.
Wonderful cover.
I try and, you know, all week
don't
I'm like,
don't spoil it for
God.
Me because I haven't read it yet.
Me
all
either.
Week I try and read it and go, I'm like, oh, I don't want to pick a mainstream book. I like to pick something weird. But God, it was so good. It's funny, legitimately funny, like laugh out loud funny, that makes fun of the past, but doesn't degrade it or make the past seem stupid or silly. It has fantastic artwork. It makes fun of the 90s in a really great way. And they're just people complained about being late, but if you could guarantee me a book that good every 2 or 3 months, I don't care. Yeah, it's worth the wait. I loved it.
I agree.
Planetary.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a book.
Exactly.
I don't care.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Right.
I don't care.
Go out.
I feel the same way about Justice, too.
Go out and just look at it. Look at All-Star Superman. Pick it up if you haven't picked it. A lot of people are.
I
you know?
Don't like Superman, and I love this series.
I know.
Oh, that's good.
See, that's the,
right, I like the end of that sentence.
Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, that book.
Superman is a boring character to me because unless you got the right colored kryptonite, he can't die.
Yeah.
You know, this
but
is
see,
this is
a,
such
he
a
takes
fun
that.
Series.
Morrison takes
yeah.
that and makes
it
funny.
Oh,
it makes
yes.
it like fun.
He perverts
interest.
It and makes it interesting. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and Tom, you're a Silver Age guy, so you can appreciate all the Mort Weisinger ideas that he's just throwing out there, and everyone you can just laugh, and it's like, hey, it's the bandaged Superman that's you know from the 57th century.
And it's not stupid. It's funny.
It
like,
is. Fun.
It was funny.
It
like
is funny. Or that great those great retro ray guns that quietly drawing and stuff.
It's quietly just
art.
Knocking it out of the
box.
Oh,
he does
absolutely.
The best Superman.
The covers on every issue have just been
brilliant.
With the word
perfect.
Balloons in it, like Jimmy Olsen running
away. Yeah, with the ray gun that's not working. And demented Superman. It's that Superman is a dick website.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. You know, but
Superman is
a
dick.
They're hilarious. But that was the charm of those books.
Yeah.
And it's just so easy to dismiss that. Oh, that's baby stars. And it's like, no, man, they were having fun. It was like, that was their way of kind of, I think, being symbiotic with like the comic strips and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just I think it catered more to that where it really was just kind of like family entertainment.
Hey, just do it. Mm-hmm. My bonus pick is for all of you who enjoy Exterminators.
Which there should be more of you
enjoying.
Of you,
there's not enough.
Enough of you. This is a big boy book, meaning there's no pictures. It's all words.
Tom, you brought prose
I brought
in here?
Prose here. It's called Rats. Observations on the History and Habitat of the City's Most Unwanted Inhabitants by Robert Sullivan. It's a guy who went into an alleyway, Eden's alleyway in New York, and watched rats for a year and talked to people that are experts on rats.
God, I thought a podcast was a waste of time.
Yeah. Hey, come on, guys.
I'm just kidding.
This means something.
I'm sorry,
this
Tom.
Means something. This is
I'm
a book.
Sorry.
It's great. If you like exterminators,
if
you love rats, pick up this book. I love it'll fit right in. So trust me, if you love that
That's
book
cool.
and you love that whole
Is it funny
realm,
at all? Is it?
It is funny, and okay. it's interesting. It's got that same sort of creepy thing that exterminators has where it's
government
funny.
Government conspiracy?
Not a government conspiracy, but just the nature of infestation.
No
it's
footnotes
funny.
About the alligators in the toilets that you hear about in New York?
No, but they do tell an awesome story about so many rats being in a house and under the floorboards that their tails get knotted up.
Ew.
So they crack it open. It's,
oh, man.
Yeah, it's a bunch of rats with their tails all knotted up. Anyway.
That's why I didn't see Willard, man. Yep. You know, it's like, no.
Anywho,
I don't want to see that.
Try and follow that up, suckers.
Oh, well.
Oh.
All right. Well, Mr. Suntress, sure. What would your top of the stack this week?
Oh, man, I need, like, books in front of me. The one that comes to mind immediately, though, is the latest chapter in the Captain America series.
Ooh.
And it's London Blitzkrieg or something like that. And
yeah,
I don't
I
have it in front of me.
I think it's London Blitz.
There you go, London Blitz. And it's Union Jack and Spitfire, so it's the old Invaders, although it's the Joey Chapman Union Jack. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it continues the Winter Soldier story because General Lukshin and the Red Skull are still in the story. And, of course, also Cap is trailing Bucky.
And Sin and Crossbones are...
Yes, they're on their way. Thank you. There we go. That would be Captain America number 19.
Another advantage of recording in a comic store, you immediate access.
And I appreciate that.
Give me that Archie number 12.
And bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia. Brubaker and Epting are fantastic, and I love it when they bring Larkin to do the old flashback scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a perfect... This and Daredevil are my two favorite Marvel books.
Has
and
that
I,
Captain
I
America
that,
book missed a beat yet?
No. And, you know, I liked what Morales was doing. I liked Kirkman's little run. And I even liked Nay Riber John Cassidy and stuff. I haven't minded at all the turns of Cap, but obviously it's in the right hands right now. Brubaker's knocking it out of the park and giving both sides what they want. It's superhero Captain America, but it's a realistic superhero Captain America.
It's
a perfect book. It really is.
It has not missed a beat from the very beginning. And this London Blitz story, Sal did this as a top of the stack the last issue. And you love the relationship between Cap and Spitfire and Union Jack.
Yep.
And that it was a very...
real.
They were talking to each other as friends.
Right.
They were not superheroes.
No.
I just loved the humanity that he brought to those characters.
Yeah. No. Exactly. He involves the old time readers that can appreciate that. Yeah. You know that Spitfire and Cap have a long history, of course. And Joey's the new Union Jack, so that's kind of interesting. And plus, yes, Spitfire does know Bucky. And so she's kind
of... Oh, and he used that in this issue,
It's just great.
He's doing,
Why I went to London.
You see in a lot of these guys that, Johns does it, and they use the past, but they make it relevant to today, so that even if you're not a fan of, or you haven't been reading for all these years, you'll still enjoy it, but you just get that extra bonus that the more involved you are with it, the more,
subtext.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I know more about Bucky as a character now than I ever could have, because Brubaker's really, he's just kind of going to in mind a bunch of history and the character and written in between what we thought was always there.
It's the same thing that Miller did with the Kingpin back in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's taking the two-dimensional character and making him three-dimensional.
Absolutely.
And yeah, you're right, filling in the gaps. It's great. It's just a wonderful way to take the character. Do you guys like Jason Todd back in DC, to go slightly off topic?
Not as well as I like Bucky back in Marvel.
I agree with that,
U.
but yeah. I'm happy as that Jason not, is back, and yeah. I like what Winnick did and has given more dimension to Jason's angst. And like they always say, they made Jason a prick, and they did it inadvertently.
Yeah.
But now you understand why he's a prick, you understand his current motivation, too.
Yeah.
I like it. I got no again, it's an entertaining story. It's an easy fix. It's no different than Unmasking Spidey. Anyway, so that's the only one that comes to mind right now.
Okay, my top of the stack this week is a book that was... sent to me by Devil's Due Publishing, and I have to admit, I've rarely ever read anything from Devil's Due. A lot of their books are your G.I. Joe and Transformers or whatever, and I just haven't really had the opportunity to pick up.
They're changing that, though.
They are. Yeah. Well, this book is called Elsinore, and it was issue number 5. So going into it, I was a little bit lost, but I really didn't care. And it was, and I think I'm being infected by the Tom Cater's love for monkey virus, because this book has nothing. I mean, it's just full of monkeys. But the basic storyline is there's this psychiatrist who's sort of been. For whatever reason, something in his career went wrong, and now he's working for Elsinore Mental Institution Level 10. And Level 10 is sort of in the basement, and it's full of psychotics and supernatural beings.
Superpowered psychotics.
Well, they're not superpowered. It's more mystical and cultish and creepy. And one of the patients there is the doctor that was there before him, who went insane and clawed his own eyes out. So that, you know, you're going into a new job, and the guy that had your job is, you know...
Better have a hell of a benefit package.
So he's sort of... And like I said, I didn't read the first 4 issues of this, so I don't know why he's there or why he's forced to be there. But it really didn't matter. I enjoyed the book so much. But on the monkey side of it, there's a character, one of these supernatural crazies can create monkeys at you know, any time. And the entire ward, the entire level of this ward is just filled with, like, these little red-eyed demonic lemurs. And then at one point in the book, an entire, you know, like, two dozen full-size demonic gorillas attack this woman in her home. And
Tom is getting excited over here.
It was unbelievable. It was like this two-page spread, and I swear, when I looked, it was a two-page spread of these gorillas breaking into this house. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is going to be Tom's top of the stack.
Can I change my top of the stack?
Yeah, I mean, it was...
I haven't read
but
yet.
But beyond the monkeys, it really was an interesting and creepy, and, I mean, it gave me a feel of, like...
these were not nice monkeys.
This was very, very... Hellblazer-ish and very creepy and like Tales from the Crypt kind of.
That's cool. They do horror well at Devil's.
Yeah,
they really do.
It was really good, and the art was fantastic. It was beautiful. The cover was phenomenal, and it was a gorilla busting in on a woman putting makeup on, and it was just awesome stuff. But it was Elsinore number 5. It was written by Ken Lily Pates, P-A-E-T-Z, and it has multiple artists. Brian Denham, I think, does the pencils, and then you have Mark Sparatio, Josh Medors, M-E-D-O-R-S, and then there's others. It was full color, 32 pages. It cost $3.25. Devil's Due Publishing. I was really impressed with it. For it never had really read much Devil's Due stuff. I'm going to go back, and I think there's a trade coming out of the first 4 issues, and I believe there's only 9 issues total in this run. So I think it's a mini. This Elsinore is a mini. But I think there's a trade coming out of the first 4, and then they'll probably trade the last 5 or whatever. But it was very interesting, and I was really impressed by it.
Well, I tell you, I did Nightwolf last week, which is a new series coming out by them. And you're right, they are doing horror. I guess it is kind of horror, but it's more of a noirish mystery horror.
This was horror. I mean, there was mystery and intrigue. And
there's various shades of horror, too, because I was thinking things like Hack and Slash, obviously, which is kind of like a Buffy kind of horror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has that kind of jag. And really, like, modern horror, more Texas
Chainsaw. Yeah, Tim Seeley wrote
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Exactly. No, I'm a... You know, they're smart. I think Devil's Due is, like, the right size. They can be nimble. And I think G.I. Joe gives them... like the platform to do these other genres and find something else that clicks. I think Blaylock's a really smart guy, and I think he runs a really cool company. And I always kick myself when the subject of Devil's Due comes up, and I'm reminded of, you know, you still haven't had any Devil's Due people on other than Norton. And it's like, yeah, you're right. I got to get another guy.
Well, like I said, we've talked to him, and I think we're going to have the Nightwolf, because he contacted us, didn't he?
Yeah, Steve did. Yeah.
And he was a real nice guy, and I think we're going to actually have it. And you love that book, so.
Tim
Seeley, we're going to have
him as well.
Steve Ancek, it's actually really funny. We recorded last week, and I had done Nightwolf as my top of the stack. Well, I get home, and like Saturday morning, I've got an email from Steve Ancek, and he's like, hey, guys, you know, I'm working on a new book, and, you know, I'd be interested in talking with you about it. And I emailed him back. It's like, yeah, I reviewed it last night on the show. Listen on Monday's episode.
Very
so
cool.
So I hope that, Steve, if you listen, I, once again, love Nightwolf. The Zero issue was great. Really looking forward to that series. Mike Norton's another guy that's done a lot of work for them. Just yep. did some stuff for Hackslash with him. Yeah, they're right around the corner.
Exactly. They're a local company.
Exactly. And they're great.
Let's go over there now.
Family Guy. They got the Family Guy license and everything, mm-hmm. and they got the one junior writer writing the stories and everything. So that's great. And the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, Forgotten Realms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We like that. Draws that.
There you go.
And, Law Squad.
I'm a big fan.
They do Law Squad.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, good lord. They're good. All right, my top of the stack. I'm definitely. I think this is this mainstream.
It's been
hyped up. It's the
You're
most
just a Marvel.
It's
zombie.
The most unmainstream book I've read in a while. It is Neil Gaiman and John Romita Jr.'s Eternals. They are Neil Gaiman is coming back and revisiting Jack Kirby's I would call underdeveloped series. And
one of the last things he did for the first time around with Marvel before going
how many
to
issues
DC
did
DC and Carmine
like 20, was it like 28? 19?
Oh,
it was 19 issues?
There you go.
Okay. If anyone out there, and I will preface this, if anyone is interested in learning more about Jack Kirby's Eternal series, listen to Bruce R's Comics Cast podcast from this last week. Okay. He did a complete rundown on the oversized hardcover collection of Kirby's Eternals and did a great rundown of kind of what was going on in Kirby's career at that point. I think that
was cool.
Around the time of him changing artboard sizes and a lot of he was getting older, all that stuff. But
they forced him into doing that, didn't
they?
He was using these gigantic artboard sizes and then they Jack, everybody else uses, this size.
And it hurt his storytelling. It really did.
Yeah.
I guess
the building blocks, too, for the new guys in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Because he certainly took a lot of those Eternals ideas, I think, and transposed them to DC and the new gods.
Mm-hmm. Was New Gods prior or after?
First. New Gods me. Okay, so was Eternals back in a second time around?
That was his return to Marvel.
Oh, there you go. Okay, good. Yeah.
Lord,
there you go.
Look at the big brain on Mark.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Sharp.
No, there
sharp
you go.
Manager knows everything.
All right.
No, let's get it right. By all means. See,
on the new version of Eternals,
yes.
Number one, the artwork. John Romita Jr. has never looked this good. And I love John Romita
Isn't
Jr.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, I like him, and I've always liked Romita, but it's so neat when things like this come out, and he goes to another level, and it looks effortless. And it's the last guy that I expected to do well on a book like this.
And he said he was rushed.
And it's great.
He said he was rushed on this.
They should rush him more. They should rush him more.
I don't know what the rest of it's going to look like, but man, those celestial pages.
Yeah.
He's tremendous.
It's people unfamiliar with the Eternals. Once again, listen to Bruce's cast. It'll kind of update you on what's going on with that story, but you don't have to because Gaiman does an incredible job. And that's the whole story, is that you're dropped in the perspective of someone that is just learning about what the Eternals and the Celestials and the Deviants are. imagine...
It was a bit of a stroke of a genius from Gaiman going, okay, well, how are we going to tell this story? And
it follows the timeline. This is 30 years after Kirby because Kirby originally said it's a 50-year storyline. Now we're 30 years later, or 28 years, whatever.
20-odd years.
20-odd years. and Gaiman is picking the story up. So something has happened in the last 30 years that he's going to go back and try and explain. The story is amazing. What I didn't know if I liked at first, but I talked to Sal about it today. There are some nods to Marvel. What is going on in the Marvel Universe now? Tony Stark is in this. Wasp is in this. There's little snippets about Civil War. And I was like, does this demean the Eternals by having some current Marvel stuff in 5 or 10 years when I go back and read this, is it gonna ruin or take it remove me from the story because of my here's where they're talking about Civil War? And after thinking about it, I'm actually okay with it.
That's cool.
It could have lived with or without it, but it is in there. But I think it is important to show that the Eternals are existing in the Marvel Universe.
Just like they forced Kirby, because I do remember that they did force Kirby to include the Eternals as well in the regular Marvel U.
Yeah.
So, no, that's cool. Gaiman's the man. I mean, it's, I have full faith in Gaiman telling great stories.
The cover artist that I'm going to have to look up here. Absolutely.
As we fill time.
As I look on the name.
When they announced Gaiman for the project.
Rick Berry did the cover. It is absolutely gorgeous. Romita, amazing.
That's the surprise.
Gaiman telling a great story. If you're... I'm going to tell you what to buy. No. You can wait for the hardcover because I'm sure they're going to come out with one. But I tell you what, I'm going to pick this one up every month and just love it. This will be my first read every month that it comes out. So Eternals, loved it. It was great.
When John Romita Jr. first came out, I hated his artwork. And then over time, I grew to really enjoy it and really like it. But this was just like heads and shoulders above anything he's ever done. The pages with the Celestials, I thought was, first, they just looked amazing. But not only that, they looked like what it would look like if giant space robot creatures came down. It was so well done and just gorgeous.
It is Romita doing everything that Romita is great at, but man, he is just loving that he's working on a Kirby.
Oh yeah.
Property.
Oh yeah. Well, there's
a line to follow though, because if you go back to when he was still with Straczynski on Spider-Man, I think Straczynski was having him do some big epic shots and stuff. And I would say the same with Miller and Wolverine for those 12 issues. I just think he's slowly been up in his game, and especially recently. And again, I'm with you, Sal. I've always liked his stuff, and I think initially I wasn't a big fan back in the late 80s when he first started, but now it really does, and I agree, Chris. It's over the top.
Another podcast, if you want, I would suggest read it and then listen to Bruce's cast. But the Marvel podcast actually had a two-parter with Neil Gaiman on, and really entertaining.
That's cool.
And Gaiman really went in with Joe Quesada about a lot of his motivations, why this appealed to him, and why he's having so much fun with it.
I'm holding up something that
Joe Quesada is not nearly as good an interviewer as you
with
are,
the,
Sean.
What the people that are listening can't see is I'm holding up these pages. These pages were previewed in other Marvel books.
Yeah.
And I picked up one. I think it was was it Captain America? And I just flipped it open, and that page came up.
Yeah.
And I was
what just happened?
What the hell's going on? Is this going on in Captain America?
But this is strangely beautiful.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
read it.
What is this? And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, it's a preview. It's a funny story.
No, we're talking.
Get out of here.
Jesus. I'm sorry.
Jesus Christ.
We were just
start the episode over.
All right.
Get the English guy back on.
That's top of the stacks.
Is something going on here next Friday?
Okay. Yes. Around Comics and Dark Tower are pleased to announce that Michael Avery. I don't know if Joe Bucco is coming, but I know that Mike is coming.
Coward.
Joe's just probably very busy drawing. Are the creators of Werewolves Call of the Wild. They will be in store and in studio next Friday. So that's Friday, June 30th.
Are they
going to
be signing stuff?
Yes, from 4 to 6:30.
I'm sorry, I'm used to all this.
And then Mike's going to stick around later and be on the show with us. So if you are in the Chicago area, please come in. Mike is just a fantastically nice guy who writes really creepy werewolf books.
It's a neat story.
Yeah.
Call of the Wild. I like it a lot.
Check it out at cotwcomic.com. Chris Marshall up at Collected Comics Library. By the time this airs on Monday, I'm going to expect my trade paperback because we have a little bet going on between my Cardinals and his Tigers.
You mean your Cardinals that just got their asses kicked by the White Sox?
Yes, those same Cardinals who are angry.
So Chris,
if you're listening, I'm going to send you the trade that I want because my Cardinals are not going to lose to the Tigers this weekend.
why are they going
to? Someone's getting dead.
I don't want to hear it from you. Hey, I want to thank all the great forum posts this week. These posts make our jobs a lot easier. Just so everyone is aware, we will post next week's topic on Tuesday, so be aware of that. We are now proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of the best comic book podcast on the net, except for Word Balloon. We're talking to John.
I don't mean to be a scab. I swear to God.
Crossing the picket line.
You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com. WordBlue.com.
And go to WordBlue.
And I want...
definitely go to WordBlue.
I want to hit on our sponsor again. I am so excited to be working with these guys. So, Sal, tell them again about the fine people at You By Now.
Tell me something.
Well, YouByNow.com is your spot on the web for toys, action figures, collectibles, and prop replicas. Check out their excellent selection of DC Direct, Marvel Legends, Master Replicas, Star Wars figures, and more. That's YOUBuyNow.com. And the good folks at YouBuyNow.com are offering a 10% discount to all Around Comics listeners. Just use the coupon code Around Comics. That's one word, Around Comics, when placing your order and receive an additional 10% off. YouBuyNow.com, check them out today.
They probably have something, yes. Monkey. They probably have an action monkey.
They have all, you know, I was on that site today. I was checking it out, and they have a lot of good stuff.
Fun
and,
stuff.
Yeah,
man.
Real fun stuff. And they actually have really good prices on stuff, too. Yeah. And you get an extra 10% off if you listen to Around Comics.
Yeah, absolutely. Go do it, guys. We would appreciate it. And
we need
you know, podcasting, we do it because we love it, but there's an expense to it. This helps us. This helps them. This helps you. Go do it.
Helps everyone. What's your problem?
Everyone. No.
You won't even go look?
Tom, now we're not just telling people what to buy.
Right,
we're telling them where to buy it.
Exactly.
So, no.
We're such whores.
No, we appreciate it, guys. If you do, just mention us. And
we're
thanks
cheap.
For us.
yes, we are cheap.
June contest. It's time to go into some haikus. We're going to announce this next Friday, by the way. So everyone, get your haikus in by Thursday. We're going to pick the best
haiku. John, do you have a haiku you can do right
since fourth grade, man.
All right.
Word balloon is good.
I got one here.
Go. Okay.
Balloon is good.
This is from Matthew Guy. He said this is his old school monkey style. Said, two wonder twins always. Got Gleek to help aid the duo. Working his tail off. And he said he hopes hopes that that Tom liked the old school monkey reference.
All right, this one
I did.
This one's from Wet Rats, and this is for Tom. This is another one. Everyone loves Tom.
Everyone wants to be near me.
The Speed Force is gone, yet still there is a speedster. Who is Flash now?
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's a good
one.
That
was good.
I like that. I do like that. It's timely.
So,
here's one from Papercut. hey,
one.
On. Well, no, he sent about 12, but I'm going to read one.
Mix and match.
Go. We got a ton of these to go through.
This
is
my favorite of his. It's deep within me. Black pools reflecting my hate. The void knows you too. For all you Center fans.
Sure,
I thought that was
pretty cool. All right.
I know who that was.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
From our friend Amy over in the UK. This is for Tom. More monkeys needed. Tom Caters does cry aloud. But microphones mute.
Weak.
Oh.
Weak.
I found it mysterious.
I think I read that one already. Hold on. I got another one.
Sorry.
Here.
All right.
I got another one.
Oh, wait. I got one. Okay.
It was average.
This is from David Price.
Hey, David.
Pow, bang, snicked, crash, thwip. Comics are not a genre. Words and pictures meet.
Ooh. Nice. It's very angry. Go,
David.
Sort of from the Missy Elliott school of...
All right.
Here's sound effects.
Here's an Around Comics.
I'm harsh.
This wet rats is actually replying. All of his posts on the forums have been in haikus now. He's totally trapped into. He goes, it's Around Comics where fanboys meet monkey boys. What's top of the stack?
Ooh.
Mm.
I like that.
Can I read one?
Sure.
No.
No.
All I got. Here, you gotta grab those.
All right.
Oh, here I got one. I got one. This one's from David Price also. It says, Rucka, Chris must rave. Salazar in Daredevil. Caters loves monkeys.
Nice.
Ooh, and staying on the Rucka trend from Wet Rats, Minder, Tara Chase. Cool and efficient killer. Wages private wars.
Nice.
Winner. There's a winner.
Please cover your loins. Those purple pants don't hold up after you Hulk out.
Is that for David?
All right. Another one from Wet Rats, because he was really good at these. Some may dream of claws, others of Cap's mighty shield. I want a flight ring.
Well, here's a good one. This is from Papercut. Papercut's rather poetic in these.
Yeah, I know.
Here's
that won't be rewarded. I'm kidding. Maybe.
He's got a couple of really good ones here. I'm going to read them both.
Here's the first one. It's her scent like whispers, fills me up, green eyes flutter, she purrs, hey tiger.
Oh, that was pretty, I like that.
That was pretty very good.
Here's one. John's
yeah,
going.
Wet Rats has a great one here. Comedian falls, blood on smiley face button, failed heroes find love. That really is.
Yeah, that's very nice.
That's like a.
That's a pit of that, you know, Watchmen, condensing yeah, Watchmen awesome. Into
yeah,
haiku.
Exactly. I was going to say that's the pitch. That's the Hollywood pitch.
That's pretty good.
I got one more from West Red. Sandman Wesley Dobbs with gas mask, gun, and trench coat faced his evil dreams.
Oh, very nice.
A little nod to the Golden Age Sandman. Got to be a big fan.
Here's
Who's
a good.
Back?
Here's one. This is a another paper cut. The sun's not so far when you're riding cosmic waves. Though lotion's a must.
I have one from Little Witch. British summertime. As dark as Vertigo books, what's that large, bright light?
I don't know. What is that large, bright light?
I don't know.
All right. Anybody reading Albion? By the way, I'm waiting for the trade.
I've been reading it, yeah.
Is it good?
I'm waiting for the trade.
You're waiting for the trade because it's a little convoluted.
Okay.
I mean, it's good. I don't mean that, you know, it's just... Reading it issue to issue and month to month, it's a little hard to do. I wish I would have waited for the trade. I like it. I'm going to have to go back and read it, really.
Okay.
But,
yeah,
but
I'm,
it's been interesting. It's another, you know, sort of postmodern, you know, deconstruction of some
British
classic
characters.
Yeah.
Classic British characters. But, yeah,
it's been very good. The first two issues were really good, I thought.
Okay.
And then I kind of fell off on it in the last couple. But
they're on, like, 5 of 6?
I think they're on 5, yeah.
Okay. The British and their characters.
All right, you jokers. I'd like to thank Kieran Gillen for being on the show today. Please check out Phonogram.
Phonogram sounds very cool.
Very awesome. John, thank you so much for sitting there.
Gentlemen, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Sal, we really missed you last week. Family doing well? Everybody healthy?
Family's all healthy and fine. All
right. Strong.
Thanks, everyone, for your concern. Yeah, my daughter's doing much better now.
Awesome. Great. Tom, always?
I'm good.
Okay, any other announcements? How's your family? guys, the forum at AroundComics.com, please check it out. We've had we actually had new forum members come into the store tonight. And
very cool.
And talk with us before the show. So that was Bernie.
I called
him Benji and Benny.
Yeah.
Today.
And
so
Ryan.
Yeah. What?
Have a fantastic week. We will be back again next Monday with another full length episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.